Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Before we go on with the third hour here, we just came off that conversation with you during Open Lines talking about the expose on Joyce Meyer and the real heart of the problem here, not the money, but the bad seed of false teaching that is at work in that ministry and constantly throwing people back on their own obedience as their surety of favor with God. I was reminded of the words that I found recently in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November. If I could give a book to Joyce Meyer that she could take it to heart beyond simply read the scriptures for what they are, a testimony to Christ, I would probably give her this book. Here is a great, this is just part of a great prayer, Life Contemplated According to the Second Table of the Law. That's what Johann Gerhardt, its author, calls it. This is from our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy. The law renders us guilty before you, O God. If you desire to enter into judgment with us, your holy will demands that I in no way cheat my neighbor in matters of business, but that I seek my neighbor's advantage. I am in no way to ridicule my neighbor's faults. Instead, I am to cover them with the mantle of love. I am not to accuse my neighbor of a quick and rash judgment, but how often I seek my own advantage through unjust means, how often I make rash judgments concerning my neighbor. Your holy will demands that my spirit, mind, and soul be free of every depraved desire, but how often my flesh entices me to sin, and how often perverse desires pollute my spirit. Like a spring continually overflows with gushing water, my heart boils continually with depraved desires. For these and all my sins and failures, I offer to you, most holy Father, the perfect obedience of your Son, who loved all people with perfect love. In his mouth was found no deceit. He did not deviate from your law in his words or deeds. There was no corruption in his nature. To his mercy seat I fly in true faith. Through faith I draw from his wounds everything that is necessary for righteousness and salvation. Have mercy on me, my God and my Father. Those are the words of Johann Gerhardt. They're recorded in their Issues, etc., Book of the Month for November, called Meditations on Divine Mercy, translated by a regular guest here on Issues Etc., Pastor Matt Harrison. You can browse before you buy this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. The information is there for you to look at. Or you can call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. When you call or write, make sure you mention Issues Etc. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November called Meditations on Divine Mercy. For the remainder of this final hour of the program, we're going to be talking about the strategy of gay activists for gay marriage. This is certainly something that occupies the attention of the press. There is a move afoot on both sides to try and make legislative progress. You've heard about the marriage amendment to the Constitution. Many people think this is a good idea. Maybe something is being missed, something very important, and that is, where does marriage come from? And who has the privilege of defining it? Do we? Does the government? We'll talk about that during this hour of Issues Etc. Our guest, Adam Mesereau, is an attorney and writer in Atlanta, Georgia. He's author of an article in the latest issue of Touchstone Magazine titled Defining Marriage Down. Adam, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Our call-in numbers, for those of you who'd like to join the conversation, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Before we get into the unspoken element in this debate that you were wise enough to point out in your article, Adam, tell me why twice in this short article in Touchstone you say that gay activists, when it comes to the issue of gay marriage, have reason to be optimistic.
Well, it struck me, and the whole reason I wrote the article was that I watched an interview on a news show with an activist who was supporting gay marriage, and she was very just a kind, temperate woman who made a very honest and sincere plea for gay marriage on the basis of discrimination. And as I sat there listening, a committed Christian and Bible believer, I found myself being swayed by this notion that, you know, who are we to discriminate against people who want to be married? And I didn't like the way that felt. And what it made me realize was that by couching the debate over gay marriage purely in terms of discrimination, I think the activists for gay marriage have done a great thing for themselves, because well-meaning, honest people who believe in fairness and the American way are really going to be swayed by that argument, and I think it's really carrying the day. I think it shouldn't be couched in terms of discrimination, but it is, and I think that can only help the gay activists.
Adam, let's talk about that term discrimination. And your insight here is very enlightening when it comes not only to this issue, but to other issues as well. How is it that the gay activists are misusing both the idea and the term of discrimination?
Well, as I wrote in my article, I think it's pretty, it's common sense, really, that discrimination is really only discrimination if the two things you're comparing are the same or essentially the same. So by couching the argument for gay marriage in terms of discrimination, what we need to understand is that gay activists are really saying that heterosexual marriage and homosexual marriage are the same. And as I sat listening to this interview on TV, I was just chomping at the bit, because I wanted this lady to have to explain how heterosexual marriage and gay marriage are the same, but no one is asking that question. So in essence, the reason I think that the gay activists have it the upper hand right now is because they're getting a free pass. If they were asked to explain on television, any particular gay activist, how gay marriage and heterosexual marriage are the same, I think then the real debate would be joined and some really enlightening things would come out of that.
So if things are essentially the same, then it is unjust to discriminate between them. If in fact, heterosexual marriage and homosexual marriage, so to speak, are essentially the same, then it would be unjust to discriminate and not allow homosexuals to marry.
I think, to my understanding of the Christian's view of government and of the role of the state and the division of labor between the state and the church, I think it's fair to say that if it were true that heterosexual marriage and homosexual marriage were the same, it would be really hard for the Christian to stand up and try to deny, under our Constitution, which is the law of the land, marriage to homosexuals. But that is the crux of the issue. Are they the same? And the fact is, they're not the same, but we're not having that debate because, as I said before, the homosexual activists have done such a great job of skipping over that issue, assuming the similarity, and moving right to the point of discrimination. And you know, as you've read in my article, what I would just love to hear is for a high-profile homosexual activist to be asked, are they the same or are they different? And, you know, I think what some gay activists have tried to do is to argue that, well, they are the same. They're basically heterosexual marriage and homosexual marriage are the recognition by the law of a loving relationship.
Okay, and I have actually heard this before. I'm sure you have as well. An advocate of gay marriage, either a homosexual or a heterosexual who advocates gay marriage, will say, look, if the law recognizes loving, committed relationships between men and women, which it does, why can it not recognize loving, committed relationships between men and men or women and women? That seems to assume, though, Adam, that the definition of marriage is merely a legal recognition of a love relationship.
Well, that's right. And if you stop and think about it, it sounds reasonable on the surface, but if you stop and think about it, there are all kinds of committed loving relationships that no one would ever claim marriage for. For example, an elderly woman and her granddaughter or daughter or son or nephew living with her, taking care of her, or war buddies who have gone through all kinds of, trials and tribulations together and would die for each other and support one another for the rest of their lives. There are all kinds of different scenarios. So the argument that marriage is merely a committed, loving relationship, I think, is clearly not a sufficient definition. And I think that the gay activists should be called under the carpet over that.
Okay, someone says this. Look, what we're really talking about here is a legal recognition of, and this, putting the best case scenario on it. Two men who want to literally enter into a legally recognized union wherein they live in love and commitment for the rest of their lives, monogamously,
right,
and exclusively monogamously. They want not only that to be recognized in terms of, say, that it is a marriage, but if we do part at some point, require us to be divorced. They want to be bound by all those ties that bind people together. Sounds like you're saying there's more than just legal recognition that binds people together in a real marriage.
Yeah, and I heard you say in that description, too, that part of the offer from the homosexual community is part of their description of marriage would be a monogamous relationship.
Yes.
And that brings us to the issue of sexuality. And if marriage can be defined as a monogamous sexual, lifelong sexual relationship, we have to ask ourselves, what is sex? Because biologically speaking, homosexuals cannot have sex. We tend to forget that because in our society, the word sex takes on a broad connotation. But in reality, homosexuals are not physically equipped to have sex. So there's no sex. There's no monogamous sexual relationship. And I think that's important to point out. You know, what we're dealing with here, your question was, is it merely a legal recognition? And I think in truth, in America, any two people can enter a contract of any kind that they want. But what the homosexual community is asking for now is something much more than that, much more than the right to contract between two people for certain rights and commitments. They want a public governmental redefinition of what marriage is, because the new definition of marriage is not related to monogamous sexual relationships, because homosexuals cannot have sex. The new definition of marriage is not is tied to this generic loving, committed relationship, and this is a redefinition of marriage. And so the question becomes, who really has the right to define marriage? And if the debate were brought to that point, then I think it would be a lot more interesting than it is right now. Who has the right to define marriage? Where did it come from? Does man have the authority through government to say, you know what, marriage, we used to think of it this way, now we're going to think of it this way? And that's the debate. That's the debate that needs to be had that is not being had.
We're talking with Adam Mercero. He's an attorney and writer in Atlanta, Georgia, author of an article in the latest issue of Touchstone Magazine titled Defining Marriage Down. We're talking about the strategy of gay activists for gay marriage. Adam, let's see if we can track how the debate might have to go. What would the homosexual have to argue in order to get what it is they seem to be assuming already in their arguments? What would they have to argue in order to say, really, government has the ability to redefine marriage into these terms of simply a legal recognition of a loving relationship, be it heterosexual or homosexual?
Well, that's a great question, and I think if you stop and we sit down and we think about it, if we were to press the homosexual activists to answer these questions, what must they say? If marriage and sex are not defined by God, which clearly is their position. If they were defined by God, we would be having a religious debate. There would be the notion that God's ideas generally don't change. But the implicit notion in the homosexual argument is that marriage came from somewhere else. And they would have to argue that it was created by government or that it was created by man. That's going to be a hard argument to make. I think And as far as for sex, you know, where did sex come from? I think they would have to, had no choice, really, but to argue that sex is not supernatural. Sex is not the result of a creator that had a design in mind for man and for woman, but rather sex is the result of evolutionary process and really has no meaning apart from procreation. And, you know, these are ugly arguments that the gay activists would have to resort to if we push them on these issues like I think we ought to.
Do you think that this is, and I guess I'm asking you to speculate a little bit here, but do you believe that, I'm struck by how quickly we went from the argument for a mere recognition of same-sex unions to within 2-3 years, the terms being changed to gay marriage. And with the rapidity of that kind of evolving of this, I'm wondering how much planning there is in the stages here that, yes, of course, they're ready to make those arguments. If pressed into doing so, they're ready to say, after all, marriage is a human invention, that sex is, in essence, kind of just the blind result of evolution, and man is completely at liberty to kind of make this up as he goes along, if he sees fit.
So do I think they would make those arguments if pressed?
I guess what I'm wondering is, are they prepared to make those arguments? As you look at the gay activist community, are they willing to simply come out and say that?
Well, I think it's a fascinating. It'll be fascinating to see if the more traditional apologists in our society do indeed join the debate by raising these issues. I think lots of homosexual activists will raise those arguments. I think some will be more fearful that they'll be rejected if they are forced really to do what they're doing, which is to actually tear down marriage. And so some might actually go ahead and do that. Some might see the trap, you know, that's being set. But in essence, what I'm calling for is for public figures who are engaged in a debate to actually ask these questions, to basically set the trap, because what's going to have to happen is the homosexual activists are going to have to tear down marriage in order to get it. They're going to have to tear it down and claim that it's not created by God. It's not transcendent. Sex is not transcendent. There's nothing miraculous about human life or human procreation. And this is why I say that I think they're getting a free pass and they have the upper hand, because we're not making them do that. If we made them articulate their argument, the argument behind the argument, they would have to tear down marriage. And I'm curious to see how far the movement would get if they were doing that.
You also point out that if they were to do this, they could be faulted with doing precisely what they claim has been done to them throughout the centuries, that a heterosexual view of marriage is being foisted upon them. They could be faulted with foisting this new view of marriage on the rest of us.
Yes, I think that's the irony of these issues, is always that the party claiming to be neutral or above it all or non-religious or, you know, purely secular or whatever, it's really just a smokescreen. The fact is, the arguments for homosexual marriage are deeply rooted in a theology, and it's the theology we've been talking about. It's the theology of human origins. It's not the theology that I hold, probably not that you or most of your listeners hold, but it is a theology, and it's a godless creation or a material view of the universe. There's also the theology, again, that God is not so closely involved in human affairs that he actually instituted marriage, but rather it appeared as an invention of man. These are theological statements, and so you've stated it well. Although the homosexual activists who complain of discrimination appear to be neutral and appear to be taking a stance that is neutral on religion and is free for everybody, what they're really doing is making a hardcore theological statement, and they want the law to reflect that. And that's exactly what they usually accuse Christians like me of doing.
So it essentially comes down to this. If if man created the concept of marriage, then man ought to be at liberty to recreate it or reinvent it or redefine it.
Agreed.
If man did not create the concept of marriage, if it doesn't have its origin in us but elsewhere, namely in God, then we are not at liberty to recreate, reinvent, or redefine it.
I agree. I agree with that. And you know, a lot of people who are listening might react and say, well, you know, I agree with everything that's being said, or I understand everything that's being said, but Adam Mercereau and Todd Wilkin don't understand that in our society, the church and the state are separate, and you can't look outside to God's will to determine what the law on marriage should be. There's lots of different religions in this country, and once you start doing that, you're going down a slippery slope. But you know, that's where the Christian view of government and how to reform government comes in. The fact is, we ought to be able to debate those issues in our legislatures. There's no law against it. Well, there is case law against it now. It was certainly not unconstitutional. But these are why I believe that Christians get so frustrated oftentimes with politics. It's because the real core of these issues has been forbidden in the legislature for discussion. And so we end up talking about gay marriage in terms of discrimination, which is silly. We can't even talk about it anymore in the legislatures in terms of the real issues, which are what you've been saying over and over. Where did it come from? Do we have the authority to change it? Will we be meddling with something transcendent if we do this? Should we have a more humble attitude because maybe this came from outside of man's legislative history?
So would you agree that really the greatest danger here is that this debate would continue apace and that these issues never be raised?
Yes, and that's what, as I say in my Touchstone article, that you know, Christians, I don't think, should fear having these debates. We should encourage them, and we know we might lose even, but because our authority is God, and we don't look to the state or to the government as our final authority, our ultimate authority, you know, we can afford to lose debates, and we will lose some, but I just think the tragedy for Christians in America is that some of these issues are being decided without the debate even occurring. And so, you know, I think that Christians ought to strive to elect representatives who understand the different roles of church and state, but also understand that there's no hermetic seal between God and the state, that God is also sovereign over the state, and that we should encourage the public debate over these moral issues and not run from it. Also, though, keeping in mind that we might lose, and understanding that in this country, the way it's set up, we may lose, but by all means, don't let the issue be decided without at least challenging the other side on the real issues.
Our guest is Adam Mercereau. He is attorney and writer in Atlanta, Georgia. We're talking about the strategy of gay activists for gay marriage. He's written an article to this effect in the latest issue of Touchstone magazine titled Defining Marriage Down. If you'd like to join the conversation 10 more minutes after the break, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues, Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172, or you can donate by check, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc.
The separation of the continents. Did it happen?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the free booklet, What Really Happened to the Dinosaurs? Well, Ken, in Genesis chapter 10, it states that in the days of Peleg, I believe that's how you pronounce it, the earth was divided. Now, is this when the continents actually split up?
Well, let me explain two things. First of all, creation scientists do believe that a division of the continents did occur, but catastrophically during the time of Noah's flood. It didn't happen slowly, as evolutionists say. In fact, earthquakes today are probably the result of this split up. There are still some leftover movements from this initial catastrophe. But I certainly don't believe the separation of the continents has anything to do with the days of Peleg. If you read Genesis chapter 10 very carefully, it lists the nations that resulted from the split up of the population that occurred at the time of the Tower of Babel. This is explained in detail later in Genesis chapter 11. So what happened in the days of Peleg? Men gathered together in rebellion against God, and so God gave them different languages and scattered them over the earth.
Were dinosaurs around during the time man was created by God? Well, the Bible says yes. You'll find fascinating information on these magnificent creatures by reading Ken Ham's faith-building booklet, What Really Happened to the Dinosaurs. For your free copy of this booklet by Ken Ham, go to our website, AnswersRadio.com. It's a free radio service of AnswersRadio.com.
It's 5:31 at AM 850 KFUO. Weather for St. Louis. Showers and thunderstorms are likely tonight. Some may be severe, low of about 58. For Tuesday, occasional rain and a high near 60. Right now in St. Louis, it's cloudy. There might be some light drizzle or mist where you are, and it's 61. And our last look at St. Louis traffic. Westbound 40 between Kings Highway and Hanley, heavy traffic there. Also, after Spady, heavy traffic through Mason. And after the Boone Bridge, stop-and-go traffic through Route K. Westbound 70 between 270 and the Blanchett Bridge, heavy traffic there. Westbound 70 at Route 94, stop-and-go traffic also. And eastbound 270 between Lindbergh and 170, stop-and-go traffic there. Let's take a look at the bridges. Northbound 55 between Park Avenue and the Poplar Street Bridge, slow traffic. And eastbound 40 between Jefferson and the Poplar Street Bridge, slow traffic there.
You've heard the saying, it's a jungle out there. That's true. But if you're like most of today's families, it's a jungle right here, right now. Find direction with Dr. James Dobson and focus on the family. Straight answers and solid advice for dealing with life in the jungle.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., an update on the euthanasia case of Terry Schiavo. Wesley Smith will join us. Wesley could have joined us today, but you know where he was? He was at the inauguration of Arnold Schwarzenegger out there in California. I can't help but resist the temptation to ask him about that tomorrow. Also, Pastor Will Whedon will join us for the conclusion of our five-part series on the Liturgy of Holy Baptism. We'll discuss also tomorrow, the life and writings of a Lutheran theologian of the 17th century, Johann Gerhardt. Pastor Matt Harrison, translator of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy by Johann Gerhardt, will be our guest tomorrow on Issues Etc. 10 more minutes left in this hour and in the program with Adam Mercero, attorney and writer in Atlanta, Georgia, and author of an article in the latest Touchstone magazine titled Defining Marriage Down. We're talking about gay activists, their strategy with regard to gay marriage. So we have before us, Adam, many different proposals. One of them is the amendment in defense of marriage. And some of our regular guests here have come on the air and talked in favor of this. What do you think about that strategy? Says, okay, we simply establish in constitutional writ a definition of marriage that excludes what the gay activists are looking for, a man and a woman, period. Does that do anything to really solve the problem or end the debate?
Well, I think I can sense what you're getting at is that, like most issues, you know, this is an issue of the heart. And the fact is you can legislate against certain things, but if the hearts, you know, are still, if there's many hearts in the nation that are still rebellious against the idea of marriage being created by God as between a man and a woman, then the law can't change that. But I do believe that is a role for the church to play. The church is to go out into society, the members of the church, and to be witnesses for the love of Jesus and for the sanctifying force in society. But there is a role in society for government as well. And as Christians who believe that government is instituted by God, we don't just throw down the Bible and say that the law should reflect God's law word for word. But we do think there's a role for government in certain areas. And I think that as a Christian who believes that God created marriage between a man and a woman, and also believes that there are practical benefits and harms done when you ignore God's law, that as a Christian we should stand up for that kind of an amendment. Again, understanding we might lose, and I'm not going to be a sky is falling type of Christian who if we don't get the amendment or if the law breaks the other way and goes the other way, I'm not going to fret that God has lost control of his creation. It would be worrisome, but it wouldn't worry me to the core. But I do think we should fight for that so that the law of the land reflects the reason and the purpose of the creation. There are actually two, I think, different amendments that are being talked about. One is just a flat constitutional amendment that sets the law of the land to say that marriage is between one man and one woman. The other idea is to have an amendment that says nothing in the Constitution or in any other legislative act should be construed as requiring the states to recognize gay marriage. So that would leave it up to each individual state as to whether they wanted to recognize gay marriage. And, of course, then you have your issues with full faith and credit. Would one state have to recognize a marriage in another state? But that's the landscape out there, and I think either one of those arguments can be made for either one of those.
And we really already have the full faith and credit horse has already left the barn with regard to the state of Vermont, already recognizing what the rest of the states in the United States are saying. Well, we may or may not recognize this civil union. Many of them simply haven't made up their mind, and it leaves that full faith and credit question still unanswered. Here's my concern about the marriage amendment, and it kind of goes to the heart of your concern in your article, and that is, if done wrongly, it could be setting the very precedent that I think we would agree we don't want to see set, and that is that we, the people, have the ability unilaterally to define what marriage is. Even if we defined it rightly, we still might be saying we define it. We're the ones who define it. Therefore, who knows if the political climate down the road changes and someone says, let's repeal that amendment and change it, in fact, to say that since we have the ability to define it and the precedent is set, we'll just define it differently.
True, but I think if you go down that road, you might end up on a slippery slope and you might end up with man not having the ability to interpret God's will on anything. I mean, why would we make laws against, theft or murder when the damage doesn't seem to be that great, other than the loss of a sacred human life? I mean, you know, Christians struggle to have government reflect what their interpretation is of God's will, and just like we said earlier, the heterosexual activists are struggling to have the law reflect their interpretation of God and marriage and the nature of man. And so I don't think we should, that is my personal opinion, I don't think we should walk away from that struggle and throw up our hands and say that because we can't, we didn't define it in the first place, we can't even recognize what it is.
There's the distinction. There you go. You've given me the answer. And thank you for turning on the light bulb. Because what we would be doing thereby is recognizing what the objective fact,
right,
rather than defining it.
Right.
Okay.
And you're right. I mean, I actually mentioned that in my article. I wasn't tracking with your train of thought, but
no, you're doing beautifully.
Okay. Okay. But yeah, and that is the key point, just to restate it now that we've latched onto it, is you know, the argument is between the homosexual movement that believes we have the authority and the ability to define sex and marriage, and then there's the more Christian-centered view or traditional-centered view that says, you know what, we didn't make sex. Sex isn't a natural occurrence. We didn't make marriage. We just recognize those things, and we try to make laws that accommodate this pre-existing reality.
We have but 1 minute. Final question. It seems that the most general and likely outcome here is that marriage is so broadly defined, either by the gay marriage question or by others, that it ceases to have any real definition. If something becomes a definition into which any situation can fit, that word no longer means anything, does it?
I agree. And just to restate that, I think that one of the big attractive qualities of the argument for gay marriage is that you have a group of people saying, praising marriage and how wonderful it is and how awful it is to deny marriage to any group of people. But as you say, if we define marriage so broadly that it can encompass any two loving people, what we've really done is we haven't put marriage higher on a pedestal. We've actually torn it down and destroyed it, and it will become meaningless because any two people in any circumstance can claim to be married.
Adam Mercereau, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your article and applying your mind to this issue.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Adam Mercereau is an attorney and writer in Atlanta, Georgia. We've been talking about the strategy of gay activists for gay marriage. He has written an article in the latest issue of Touchstone Magazine titled Defining Marriage Down. Here's the website for Touchstone Magazine. It's www.touchstonemag.com. It's all one word, www.touchstonemag.com. Or you can subscribe to Touchstone Magazine by calling the Fellowship of St. James toll-free at 1-877-375-7373. That's 1-877-375-7373. Ask to receive Touchstone Magazine. Their website address again, touchstonemag.com. Tomorrow on the program, the conclusion to our series on the Liturgy of Holy Baptism with Will Wheaton, Pastor Matt Harrison will join us to talk about the thought and writings of Johann Gerhardt, 17th century Lutheran theologian, and Wesley Smith will join us after his debut with Arnold Schwarzenegger at the inauguration to talk about the euthanasia case of Terri Schiavo. That's tomorrow on the program. To hold a fast point, a reference point, and say, this is what the thing means, this is what marriage is the essential heart of this debate. But beneath that lies the greater question, and that is, how did it get to be what it is? Christians have the answer to that, therefore, we're well qualified to enter the debate about gay marriage. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.